Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 48 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me on this lovely Wednesday morning, or afternoon, or evening, wherever you're listening to this, is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes, ready for more Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We've got some classic bits coming up soon.
Yeah, and it looks pretty cold outside, so it's a good thing that we're in somewhat warmer weather than the
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So this minute begins with Neil walking along the highway and ends with a woman on the phone giggling. So as we saw yesterday, Neil sort of got stranded in this massive car park in the airport. You know, the car in V5 was missing. Now he needs to make his way back to the airport terminal in order to try and get another car, I guess. There is absolutely no dialogue in this entire minute. This is a dialogue-less minute. You know, we get the music, as we discussed yesterday. Within that music, we also get the same callback that we had yesterday, where we hear Neil once again screaming, "You're messing with the wrong guy." But we get to actually see, this is a very visual minute because we get to see his journey that he's taking from this car rental parking lot back to the airport. So he starts walking down the highway and we see all these cars speeding by. And then it jumps, the scene changes, and we see him standing on an embankment that's like filled with ice and snow. And he has this bright idea that he's going to, you know, take a shortcut and walk down this embankment. So you see the look on his face. He seems to contemplate whether it's a good idea or not. And he comes to the conclusion that he probably is making the right decision in doing this. You know, we obviously don't know exactly where he is. So we could, you know, we can't make that judgment. We have to rely on Neil to make that judgment of whether it's the right call or not. And he starts walking down. Now, just the 10 or 15 seconds that we get to see him walking down this embankment are great. I mean, Steve Martin once again shows how great of an actor he can be, you know, because he takes this normal everyday type of situation of someone walking across snow and just turns it into something completely different. You know, we get to see the look on his face as he's, you know, making the steps. He's, you know, one step at a time, and he's concerned that he might fall down. He's concerned that he's going to lose his balance. You know, he keeps testing the ground as he's walking down this embankment and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's done really, really well. And
yeah, it's a lovely bit of physical comedy.
Yeah, and he like tries to balance himself, and then at one point he loses his balance, and we see him like slide down the embankment, and you see his hat and the bags fall also. They all three of those items fall separately. You know, the suit bag and the hat.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
The briefcase stays at the top.
That's right. That's what I was just about to say. Right. I was about to say that the that's okay. The garment bag and the hat fall down, but the suitcase actually gets stuck on the embankment. Okay. Which means that later on, he's going to have to climb back up there to get the suitcase. You know, which you don't really think about at the time. And then we see Neil, there's a shot of Neil on the ground with a lot of slush and snow around him. And we see his hat is just not that far away from him. And as he's about to reach out to get his hat, you see some sort of truck or something that just comes by and just completely flattens it. And, you know, it just disappears. There's absolutely no hat anymore.
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't the driver notice that there's some guy on the ground there?
Maybe, although I get it feels almost like it happens. Maybe it happens straight away. Like he just didn't really have time to stop. Like he just,
well, he doesn't even slow down almost.
No, yeah.
You know, I mean, the slide itself is fun to watch. I mean, he does a great job with that, the way that he falls down there. You know, but he although is pretty close to that truck.
Yeah. Well, he's so close. I'm actually looking at the shot. If you actually look, you never see his face. I don't think that's Steve Martin.
I don't think so either.
No. Definitely not when he's sliding down. You can tell again, you don't see his face. There's the two shots when he's sliding towards the camera and away from the camera. Well, vice versa. And it's not him. But yeah, you can tell when he's on the floor by the truck, it's not him either.
Right.
You can tell he doesn't quite have the same mannerisms.
True. But when he falls down, it is him.
Oh, yeah.
You can see it's him.
Is, yeah. So oh, yeah, definitely. But it.
You know, the sliding down is right. You know what? It even looks.
It's the falling off the edge, I guess, that isn't it?
Right. But it looks to me that the guy who is falling, who apparently is just a stuntman, not just a stuntman, it is the stuntman. Sorry. It looks like he's wearing a wig that he has white hair. You know, it doesn't look like it's Steve Martin's regular hair.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that fact. But yeah, the guy's on the ground there is probably not Steve Martin, because that is pretty dangerous to be so close to the truck.
Yeah. And there's just something slightly off about it. He doesn't quite have the, because Steve Martin's brilliant at physical comedy, and his reaction to it you kind of feel like Steve Martin would have done more to it. I think it just feels a bit, there's just something slightly off about it.
Yeah, could be. And then
I'm kind of surprised they didn't cut to a close-up of his reaction to the hat, but I guess you almost don't need it, because you just, it's ramping up so much, the kind of the crap that's befalling him at the moment, so maybe you don't need it.
Yeah, completely. And again, I mean, you can see that he does look in the direction of the truck after the hat is gone, saying to himself once again, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Hmm.
You know, so, and then the shot changes and we get to see Neil walking across the runway.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think it'd be that easy to get onto the runway.
Yeah, even prior to 9/11, I don't know if you could really get that simply onto the runway as he's doing that. And as he's walking along, we see a whole bunch of TWA planes, and we also see another plane with two blue stripes on it. So I decided to do a little bit of research. First of all, I started with TWA. Right. So for anyone who doesn't know, TWA was one of the major American airlines in the 1930s when they created the four major airlines. This was one of them. You had American, United, Eastern, and Transworld Airlines, which at the time was known as Transcontinental and Western Air, which is still TWA. It was bought up in 1939 by Howard Hughes, who owned it. And he actually, after World War II, expanded their flying to Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. And they became the second unofficial flag carrier of the U.S. because the first one was considered Pan Am. Originally, they wanted to create their main hub to be in Kansas City, which here we're in St. Louis, so not that far away. And for some reason, that didn't work out. And in the end, they decided to make their largest hub in St. Louis, where this is actually filmed, at Lambert International Airport. The main transatlantic hub is JFK in New York, or was JFK in New York, right? In 2001, they actually filed for bankruptcy, and they were bought up by American Airlines, who, after 9/11, basically fired just about everybody. And they pretty much closed the St. Louis hub not long after that. Now, TWA had some firsts in the airline business. One of the things was in 1930, they were the first airline to offer the first all-plane scheduled services from coast to coast. What that meant was that it was a flight that lasted 36 hours, which stopped off in Kansas City along the way. So it flew from New York to Kansas City, and then you waited around, and then, you know, you moved from there to LA. You might have had to have a few jumps along the way also, because 36 hours is actually quite long. It takes you a day and a half. Wow. They were actually the first airline to have in-flight movies. So in 1961, on a flight between New York and LA, they showed the movie By Love Possessed, which starred Lana Turner. This was on July 19th, 1961. And they only showed it to the people who were in first class. Hey, you paid for
yeah,
coach,
yeah,
you
yeah.
don't get to watch a movie.
No, fair enough.
Exactly. So between 1942 and 2001, when they filed for bankruptcy, they had 84 different incidents along the way of crashes and things like that, which seems like a lot, actually. But apparently with the number of flights that they have on a daily basis, or had on a daily basis, that is actually, it's a pretty low number. So their first major crash actually happened in 1940, when the plane crashed and killed Carol Lombard, who, famous actress at the time.
Yeah.
Her mother was also on the flight with her, and there were 20 other people that were on that flight. In 1956, they actually, a TWA plane crashed, had a mid-air collision with a United Airlines flight, where 128 people were killed on board. And after that happened, they actually started changing a lot of the rules and regulations about flight operations in the U.S. because they didn't want to have these type of mid-air crashes anymore. 4 years later, in 1960, something similar happened again, also between TWA and United, where 134 people were killed in that in that crash, 84 on United Airlines, 44 on TWA, and 6 people on the ground. It was also, they had numerous terrorist attacks on TWA planes. There were six TWA airliners that were hijacked.
Jeez.
Okay, yeah, completely. So in 1969, there was a flight that was between Rome and Athens that was hijacked, and it was diverted to Damascus. Nobody was injured, but they ended up blowing up the nose of the plane. Not really sure, why they would do that, but okay. In 1970, there was a flight that was hijacked between Frankfurt on its way to New York. It was taken to Jordan. And at the same time, there were two other planes that were hijacked, and they had three planes that were all sitting on the tarmac, and they blew them all up. I actually have a cousin that was on one of those planes.
Jesus.
Yeah. He, this is, 52 years ago from when I discussed it with him at some point. It still was pretty traumatic for him because he was, even though everyone survived, they didn't kill anybody there. They blew up the planes. And at the same time, they hijacked a fourth plane that they took to Cairo, the group of terrorists.
Mm.
So, yeah. In 1971, there was a flight that was hijacked, and they wanted to take it from Albuquerque to Havana. And again, all the passengers were okay. In 1974, there was a flight that was hijacked between Tel Aviv and New York. And the plane actually crashed in the Ionian Sea. And apparently they found that there was a bomb on board. And it killed all 88 people that were on that flight. Just a few more. In 1976, there was a flight that was hijacked by five Croatian separatists, and the plane was flying from LaGuardia to New York, LaGuardia to O'Hare in Chicago, and they wanted them to go to Montreal, which is pretty interesting. And when they finally gave up, they found that these hijackers had fake explosives on them. They didn't have anything real on them. And then in 1985, there was the most famous TWA hijacking, where there was a flight that was hijacked between Athens and Rome and taken to Beirut. Then it was flown to Algiers, and then it was flown back to Beirut, and then it was flown back to Algiers, and then once again back to Beirut. Now, do you know anything about that flight? Do you remember anything about it, hearing about it? TWA flight 847?
Yeah, is that? I think so. Is that the? I think so. Yeah, I think so. Is that the one that is in the film Munich? I think
not Munich. Not Munich. You're close. It is in a movie. I'll give you a hint. Chuck Norris.
I don't know then. Chuck Norris ones. I can't think of a Chuck Norris terrorist. Well, there's lots of Chuck Norris terrorist ones. I can't think of the airplane one. I don't know.
It's in Delta Force.
Oh, I still haven't seen Delta Force. I'm ashamed to say.
Okay. So yeah. So Delta Force is more of a, more or less a wet dream of what they wish happened. You know, of saving the passenger because there really was no Delta Force sent in to take care of them. But one of the things that did happen tragically on that plane was that there was a Navy SEAL that was on the plane that was murdered. Robert Dean Stethem, and they actually. You know, they beat him up and then shot him and dumped his body on the tarmac. Very tragic. Jeez. Yeah. And, there was one more hijacking. In 1986, there was a plane that was flying from Athens or was on its way to Athens where there was a bomb on board, which blew part of the top of the plane off. And four people were sucked out of the plane. Or ejected out of the plane and died, unfortunately, from that. And there were a few other people that were injured along the way, but 110 passengers still survived this incident because of the way that the pilot was able to land the flight.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's about TWA.
So I'm flying to Italy in 2 weeks. You're not filling me with much confidence.
Okay, so here I'll give you a little more confidence then. So the second airline that we see here is called Aerolíneas Argentinas. Okay, it's the largest it's the flag carrier of Argentina. Okay, the airline was created in 1949, and then it merged with Iberia, who took control of it in 1990. Okay, now the last time that something happened on a plane from their fleet was in 1970. Okay, where someone died. I'm sorry. So where someone died, the last time someone died was in 1970 from some tragic thing, tragic crash. There have been it's actually ranked among the safest airlines in the world. So you should maybe try and fly. Via Argentina. fly to Italy via Argentina.
Might be a bit too far.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only time that there was a fatality since then was someone died of food poisoning on the plane in 1992.
Yeah.
They apparently had contaminated shrimp that had cholera, and they fed that to the passengers, and one of the passengers actually died from that. So, yeah. Jesus. Yeah, which reminds me of an airplane. Food, then.
Yeah.
Don't eat the fish, which is very funny because this week I finally saw for the first time Zero Hour, which is the 1957 movie that airplane is pretty much based on, and it's almost entirely spoofs that. So it's just it was really funny watching that. Because there are lines taken directly from the original movie.
Yeah.
You know, even the characters, the same names of the characters and stuff like that. But they have the whole thing with eating the fish. Anyone who ordered the fish was in trouble on that plane. So that was very fun. So Neil is walking across this tarmac for some reason. Again, we're still not really sure why he's walking across that tarmac. You know, there's no easier way of getting to the airport. I don't know.
It doesn't look that far away from the previous shot, but yeah.
Now, I love the fact that as he's walking along the tarmac, you actually see a plane take off right next to him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, again, as we mentioned a little earlier, that probably is not Steve Martin, but that plane looks pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see you don't see the wind blowing his hair or anything like that, but still.
No, I think it's pretty close. It's done with a long lens, which flattens the depth of the image. So he's probably a lot further away than it looks.
But I mean, and that plane looks still humongous.
Yeah,
seriously. Wow. That's just pretty amazing that they show that.
Yeah.
And then, first of all, it's at this point throughout this entire time we're still hearing the music that we were hearing from yesterday, and at this point, right after that plane flies by is when we hear the background sound of you know, Neil saying you're messing with the wrong guy. Which makes it even funnier because it's as if he's like theoretically screaming it at the airplane.
At the airplane.
that's flying by. You know. And at this point the shot, you know, I love the way that he walks across the entire screen. You see him go from left to right. You know, they give us those extra seconds to really take in where he is. And then the scene changes and we see two doors, you know, open up, and then we see these feet walk in with these disheveled, you know, shoes and stuff like that. Do you really think that quickly shoes can get deteriorate like that?
I did wonder. They almost look like slippers in that. It's so bizarre. I think I don't think they'd be that destroyed. Although could it be from earlier in the film as well, or that he's been through? But still, yeah, they're pretty ruined. I imagine a guy like that, they'd be quite expensive, proper leather shoes, which are usually pretty sturdy. But but it works. It works as a gag.
Yeah, for sure. And I love the way that they pan up, and you know, you see his whole body as it's being panned up.
And it gives you a really good sense of what he's been through. You see his bags ruined. You see his jacket's a bit dirty. His shirt and then obviously you end on his face.
Right. Well, first of all, I love the fact that you see his tie, right? So it's like it says to me that okay, he's putting the tie on there like maybe he's got like a toothache type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, we'll talk shortly about what the script actually explains what that is. Do you have any guess as to what he's doing there?
No, I didn't get that. It's weird. As I say, it looks like a toothache thing. I kind of feel like he's done something to his jaw. He's like being smacked, smacked by something. But
all right, so we'll keep everyone in suspense for a few more moments,
okay?
Just to be able to hear what that is. Now, actually, he's got like all these smudges across his face. Also, you know, he's got a smudge on his forehead and a smudge on his cheek and a smudge on his chin and stuff like that as he's doing it. Now, the music keeps playing. As he's walking around, you know, you see all these people around him. Everyone's going about their business. Again, nobody's looking at this strange guy who looks like he has a toothache, you know. And then we see that he like reaches up and pulls it off. You know, he's able to take off the tie in a very simple fashion, and he just looks furious, furious. And then through the last second of this minute, and literally the last second, we see a picture of a woman talking on a phone. That's and we're going to leave it at that. We're going to make people wait until tomorrow to find out who that woman is and why she's talking on the phone. Do you have anything else for this minute, David?
This is jumping back a bit further, but I think the very opening bit, I was just kind of analyzing the shots a little bit. It's quite nice when he's going across the highway at the beginning, and it kind of gets a sense that you've got everyone flying by, and obviously, in an obvious sense, it's just showing that he's walking across a highway somewhere dangerous that you shouldn't really be crossing. But also, I think it does give a sense of everybody's lives carrying on as normal, and it's emphasizing how everyone else is able to travel and do what they like. They're all in the car, and he's not. Again, it's kind of rubbing it in a little bit more.
Yeah, completely. I totally agree with you on that one.
That's one thing that I kind of gathered shot wise, but
that's great.
Also there's nice, there's a bit of a, on the, in terms of music cues, they kind of, it's quite nice how they have the they have a specific kind of scratch when he falls off the edge, when he slides down, to kind of point that out.
Sure, very good. All right, so every day I talk about the differences in the final script and what was in the final edit. And so we have a few little things. First of all, it just automatically jumps to him entering the airport. You know, we don't get anything. We don't get him walking on the highway. We don't get him falling down the snowbank. We don't get him walking across the tarmac. You know, none of that is mentioned in there. I guess they must have thought about it on the day. They said, hey, why don't we do this? You know. But the script then gives a very descriptive account of Neil as he's walking into the airport itself. So I just want to quickly mention that. So it says, the doors open and Neil shuffles in. We start on his expensive Italian shoes and move up. The shoes are soaked with water stained with road salt, frayed and torn. A tassel is loose and dragging. We move up to his pants legs. The cuff is on one leg is ripped and trailing behind. The fabric is soaked with water and stained with salt and mud. His beautiful trousers are flecked with mud and salt. His overcoat is splattered with water and dirt. He stops as we land on his face. It's frozen and speckled with the same salt and grit. His eyes are wild with rage. His teeth are clenched. His hair is standing on end and glistening with frost. He's wrapped his necktie around his head to keep his ears warm. He looks left, then right. His upper lip pulls back, and he snarls. So, I mean, that, first of all, that's great description. And Steve Martin does a great job of making us see that character as it was written, you know, in the original script. But I do like the fact that they explained to us what he was doing with his tie. He was trying to keep his ears warm.
Makes more sense now, yeah.
Yeah, it does. No question about that. All right, so every Wednesday we do a little segment called Hugh's Hump Day, where my guest will give us his top favorite John Hughes movies. So, David, why don't you give us your top five favorite John Hughes movies?
This became an interesting task for me because I realized, much to my shock, because I always think, oh, yeah, I love John Hughes. I haven't seen that many of his films. I realize I've only actually seen four. I think I've seen five, but I think I've seen Curly Sue, but I can't remember. I think I might have just seen the trailer a lot on videos when I was a kid. So this is more of like a top four.
Well, we'll put Curly Sue down as number five.
But so, because, yeah, Curly Sue number five, maybe.
Because you like the trailer so much.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I saw
on the merit of the trailer.
Yeah. Number four, I'm going with The Breakfast Club. It's much loved by many, but I'm not a massive fan of it. It's a film I watched quite late on. I only actually saw it for the first time, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago. And it was okay. It's very good in places, but I find it a bit flawed. Overall, I don't know how well it's aged in some places. And some of the kind of little dance montage and stuff, I was a bit like, maybe I was in the wrong mood, but I wasn't a massive fan.
Okay.
But the top three, I am happy with. Number three, I've got Uncle Buck. This is one I've not seen all the way through for a long while. It's one that's on TV a lot, and I occasionally catch bits around it. It's quite often on Christmas holidays and things. And I do enjoy Uncle Buck. John Candy obviously starring in that, and we might come to that on another list later on in the week. It's a whole lot of fun. And then number two is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I do like it a lot, which is why it was easier to get me on this show than it was on the Great Escape one. But number one for me though is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's kind of an old personal favorite of mine. I've watched it a lot when I was young, and it's one I just love it. I think it's a lot of fun. Kind of touches on what John Hughes is good at, kind of who's famous for doing these kind of teen movies. It's got less angst than some of his other teen movies. Although there is some of it in Alan Rook's character, but it's also got a lot of jokes, and it's still got heart. So his films always have that bit of heart in there. But not too much. It doesn't get too cheesy. I find, I don't want to go to talk about the end of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but there is a bit of a schmaltzy bit at the end, which I'm sure somebody will get to later on down the line. whereas I think Ferris Bueller avoids that. I think it's, for me, it works. It works. I'm not a big fan of just it's kind of sentimentality really in films, and I think that's one of his that avoids that. I mean, there's tiny hints of it, but overall it's more just a fun time, and I just like it a lot. So that's definitely my number one.
Cool. All right, great. Thank you very much for that. So every day we do a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a little story about something that might have happened to us along the adventures of life. So, David, you got another one for us?
I do. Well, this is kind of an extension of yesterday's story. I was telling about our disastrous trip to the Cannes Film Festival. Well, so a couple of years later, we enjoyed Cannes so much as a company, we decided to try and go every couple of years whenever we could. But this time we weren't doing it as a whole company. After the disaster last time, we're like, no, I think they lost a lot of money on that trip. So this time it was more a case of, if you want to go to Cannes, sort it out. And so we kind of went separately, and I wasn't going to stay for the whole festival. I was just going to go to Cannes for, I don't know, like a week maybe, rather than the full 2 weeks. And I went separately. I went a little later than some of the rest of the guys. So after the disaster in the previous like 2 years ago, and because I was on my own, I was like, right, I'm going to be well prepared. I was nice and set off nice and early. Drove down to the nice clear drive down to Stansted Airport again. It's kind of our nearest big one, and everything very smooth. Got through my luggage sorted, got my tickets sorted, on my everything on there, and had a bit of food at the in the airport, and then I went through to the gate as like a found which number it was, and was sauntered over there. And I got to gate, I think it was like, I don't know, let's say it's 42. God knows what it really was. It was a few years ago. Gate 42, head up there, and I see there's a queue. So I was like, okay, cool, I'll get the back of the queue. They must be ready to get on the plane. And I was actually listening. I had my headphones on. I was listening. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I was listening to the Lambcast.
Great shout out to that.
I can't remember which episode it was, but I'm almost certain I was listening to that. And so yeah, I was listening to people chatting movies, which is good. I was enjoying myself. But then I was in this queue for a little while, but I didn't think anything about, you know, flights can be late. But then the queue started to move. I was like, okay, great, getting on the plane. I showed them a ticket and they said, oh, that flight left like 15 minutes ago. It's like, I was like, well, what am I queuing for? He says, oh, this is the next flight afterwards.
Oh, wow.
So I'd had my headphones on and supposedly they'd been calling out my name, but I was just too busy listening to Jay and whoever talking about that they're the best movies.
Jay's fault. There you go.
Yeah, it's definitely Jay's fault. So I blame him. I'll send him the bill for the money lost on that trip. But yeah, I missed my flight to Cannes again the next time I tried to go. This time was less easy to, well, not that that was easy, to get it replaced either. So I just drove home. My wife got surprised when I came back through the door saying, hi, I'm not in Cannes, I'm back home. So I did end up in Cannes, but I had to go the following day and waste a lot of money on another ticket.
Wow.
So yeah. So I'm just cursed. Cannes is cursed for me.
I think you should stop going to Cannes.
I did. Well, I've not been that many times. I think I've only been three times. The third time to Cannes was successful. I got there. I got the plane. Nothing went wrong. I was absolutely sure. I did not wear headphones, but I was getting on the airplane. And I did make one successful trip to Cannes. But those other two.
Three times a charm, as they say.
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much for that very entertaining story. Thank you, David. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you, if as long as they're not trying to find you in Cannes.
Yeah, if you head over to blueprintreview.co.uk, you'll find all my film reviews and the likes.
Excellent. And to find me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on my website. So, David, you feel like coming back tomorrow to find out who this woman is?
Oh, yes. I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow.
All right.
Yes.
Very good. So, until tomorrow, you're
fine. You're fine.